Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Here we go again. Another Amazon warehouse in New York voting on union representation. Also in the spotlight, workers at Apple and Activision. And today on the show, our independent labor voice, Tom Buffenbarger, latest from the UAW and the North Central Florida Labor Council. Welcome to the Tuesday, April 26th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms and growing, I might add. You can check us out on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. We have actually three guests in the lineup today. We're going to kick things off with Mr. Thomas Buffenbarger, longtime contributor to America's Workforce. Retired for a number of years from the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, and now our independent labor voice and labor observer. Tommy called attention to the railroad situation that almost ended up on a strike, and we touched on this topic yesterday with Greg Regan on behalf of the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. We have a supply chain problem in America, and the big problem is a lot of railroad workers are not working. They were laid off because of hedge funds buying the railroads. We'll touch on that. We'll touch on organizing. More than 100 workers at the Cascades Containerboard plant, this is in Niagara Falls, New York, ratified their first union contract after voting almost 3 years ago to form a union with the machinists. In their struggle for respect at the bargaining table, the IAM members at the Canadian company rallied support from across the labor movement as well as members of Congress. We'll touch on that. Tom has a history of organizing campaigns at the machinists. Our second guest is Josh Nasser. We tried to link up with him about a week and a half ago, but he was busy. He was on the West Coast. They're keeping him very, very busy at the UAW. One of the issues we're going to get into is whether or not we're going to see that tax credit for union-made, American-made, union-made electrical vehicles. Now, right now, there is a tax credit of, I believe, around $7,000. And the UAW is trying to boost that by $4,500. Now, Congress is back in session this week. So we'll touch on that and see what else is on the spring agenda. Also changes at the NLRB, all good stuff. And lastly, we're going down to Gainesville, Florida today, and we're going to check in with Lanny Mathis. Lanny comes to us from the IBEW. He's a business manager at IBEW Local 1205, and they represent workers in the electrical industry throughout North Central Florida, West Florida, as well as South Georgia. Now, he is going to be speaking on behalf of the North Central Florida Central Labor Council. He's also president of the Big Bend Building Trades Council. So he'll talk about politics in that area, how that's affecting union brothers and sisters, the reach of the council, and what he sees for a building in that area, especially with the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. So nice lineup on the show today with three guests. And we got a lot of organizing going on and voting. Voting began yesterday morning at LDJ5. That's an interesting name for a warehouse. That's the second Staten Island Amazon warehouse to hold a union vote. This comes a few weeks after an unprecedented union victory at the JFK 8 facility. Spearheading the effort again is the Amazon Labor Union, the same union, the same one that bested Amazon's aggressive anti-union campaign earlier this month without the help of a major union. Now, that vote was 55% in favor of the union. And, of course, Amazon is challenging that to the NLRB. By the way, Senator Bernie Sanders And Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez spoke over the weekend before a crowd of hundreds of union supporters outside that warehouse, kind of getting everybody in the mood, get them fired up for the vote, which is happening all this week. Meanwhile, game testers at Activision, that's the game maker responsible for the Call of Duty franchise, very popular, have been trying to form a union. They'll now get their chance to hold a union election after a favorable Federal Labor Board ruling last Friday. The holding is just the latest development in a long-standing rift between the company, the workers, and the management, which included a weeks-long strike sparked when some testers were informed that they would be terminated in several months while others would be receiving raises. Workers are seeking better pay, better hours, better workplace culture. The company was sued last year, by the way, by a California state agency over claims of sexual harassment and discrimination. Boy, there's a lot going on in that workforce. Whoa. Salespeople, technicians, and other workers at an Apple store in Atlanta could form the tech giant's first unionized retail location. More than 70% of the workers signed union authorization cards to join the Communication Workers of America. And the workers have filed for a union election with the NLRB. By the way, the CWA also represents unionized contractors with Alphabet. That's Google's parent company. Apple retail store workers in New York City's Grand Central Station are also gathering signatures to unionize with Workers United. Now, that is the same affiliate of the Service Employees International Union that is organizing at Starbucks. And let's see, with an overwhelming majority of support, the dancers at the Boulder, Colorado Ballet have signed cards in support of forming a union with the American Guild of Musical Artists, or AGMA for short. AGMA has officially notified the ballet's management and is hopeful that the company will voluntarily recognize the union. Griff Braun is the union's national organizing director. Griff said workers across the country are recognizing the value of speaking with one voice, organizing, and forming unions. AGMA is very happy to support the dancers of the Boulder Ballet as they take the first step in this journey, and we look forward to a productive working relationship with the management. By the way, you might want to check more about this union. That's the American Guild of Musical Artists, because in May, and this is going to be on May 9th and May 11th, you can join them for two free Union Organizing 101 webinars, which is going to be open to all in the performing arts sector. And Braun said that this is going to run for about an hour and will conclude with a Q&A session with various artists and the union's professional staff. In all levels, you realize what's going on? In all levels of work in America, doesn't matter the profession, there's organizing going on. On the political front, Maryland's General Assembly overrode Governor Larry Hogan's veto to enact the Time to Care Act of 2022. And with that, Maryland now joins a growing list of jurisdictions. This includes California, Colorado, Connecticut, Oregon, Massachusetts, New Jersey, New York, Rhode Island, Washington State, and Washington, D.C., that have adopted a paid family and medical leave insurance program. The program provides up to 12 weeks of paid leave for eligible employees. Now, it's my understanding this might be tacked on to the federal program. Now, that's not paid. You get 12 weeks, but it's not paid. This one is paid. And the governor said it was too broad, too vague. That's why he vetoed it. He's got a lot of union support in Maryland. And you got to salute the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees on this one. They've been working on this bill for 22 years. They started in the year 2000, and they finally got a result. And it almost didn't happen. Luckily, they overrode the veto. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, our independent labor voice, Tom Buffenbarger.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
American workers are the best in the world, but we face an uphill battle against countries like China that don't play by the rules. There's a bill right now in Congress that would give American workers the trade tools we need to fight back and win. Join me in telling Congress to pass this bill. Visit AmericanManufacturing.org to learn how.
Paid for by the Alliance for American Manufacturing.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. I'm laughing here because God knows what's going to happen to Twitter now that Elon Musk bought it for $44 billion. He's taking it private because he wants to make it better. Well, that's going to be interesting. All right, let's go to line number one. Welcome one of our regulars, longtime contributor, former general president of the International Machinists and Aerospace Workers, Mr. Thomas Buffenbarger. Tommy, how are we doing today, my brother?
We're doing great, Flash, and I heard your lead about Elon Musk. I guess when you buy a Tesla now, the only choice for radio listening is going to be watching and listening to verbal Twitter on the car radio.
Like I said, we don't know what's going to happen with that platform, but he's all for free speech. But I don't know. There are boundaries. We all know you're not supposed to yell fire in a movie theater either. So we'll see what happens down the road.
And maybe the workers at the Tesla factories could use that free speech that's being suppressed as they try to organize those sites.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what they did at the Amazon warehouse, the one that they voted for the union 55%. They were tweeting all kind of pictures of union busters. And boy, that reverberated. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. Tommy, I know you want to talk about retirement security today. And it's a very important topic because there's a couple of politicians in Washington that want to kind of revisit Social Security and Medicare every 5 years. They call that sunsetting. We've got that issue. And then there's another complication here. During the pandemic, we all know a lot of people lost their jobs. So what did they do? They went and used their retirement money. That would be like an individual retirement account. And you get penalized for that if you withdraw money under a certain age. A lot of people did that. And right now, we have to look at pensions in America because, well, look at the baby boomers. You got 10,000 people retiring each and every day. Some of them scratching their heads saying, I'm not ready to retire. I can't afford to retire. Tommy, what's going on? What's your perspective of all of this in America today?
Well, Flash, this is like our continuing drama in this country, and we're all aging. I mean, every one of us. I'm retired now. There was a great article that appeared in the Washington Post this past Sunday, and it's from a professor named Daniel Hemmel, who's with a professor in Chicago, and he studies retirement plans. He studies pension plans. He studies IRA plans. He studies 401ks. And he is paying attention, and thank God he is, and that he wrote this article, to legislation coming down the pike as we speak right now on that will affect pension plans. It's called Securing a Strong Retirement Act of 2022, or for short, SECURE 2.0. And part of this really impacts people who have IRAs. And in IRA accounts today, as we talk, since they were first conceived and implemented back in the early 80s, when regular people like us could get into them, as the third stool of our saving, or third leg of our stool for savings, being pension plan, good old-fashioned pension plan, Social Security, and your personal savings. This was meant to help bolster the personal savings leg of retirement. We all know there was a war then on regular pensions, and they're disappearing faster than we can imagine. And everything has been pushed toward IRAs, which gave Wall Street a bigger amount of control over our pensions. And Wall Street loves IRAs and 401ks because right now they're managing $21.6 trillion socked away in IRAs and 401ks. Can you imagine that? $21.6 trillion.
Wow.
And they're getting fees for managing this money. They're making a lot off the meager contributions and savings regular folks like us can sock away into a 401k or IRA. Well, what they want to do in this legislation is to allow people like who have to take what's called the minimum distribution when they hit age 72. They want to bump that out to 75. So we could leave our money ride for three more years where we're not taxed on it until we start to withdraw it. Well, the problem with that is many of us can't afford to do that because we need the money now in our, you know, to survive in retirement.
Mm-hmm.
Who this benefits is about, I think it's 29,000 taxpayers who have amassed mega IRAs, which means each one has a balance of $5 million or more dollars.
Oh, boy.
Some of these guys, and you'll recognize the name Peter Thiel from PayPal, his IRA is worth $5 billion. I think he could probably afford to wait out three more years before he withdraws.
Yeah, I think so.
However, what they're doing with their monies, they're using it to hide other earnings. They just dump it in their IRA. And from the IRA, they can also take distributions, and they do it by making political donations. It may be to either party or everybody. Nobody has broken that part out.
Mm-hmm.
But they're using a savings tool meant to help people for retirement as a means of making their political wishes and desires into reality that only serves to further enrich them. And this proposed legislation is going to make that even easier and more lucrative for the wealthiest IRA holders to make even more money. And it does nothing for the people at the other end of the spectrum who struggle every day to contribute a few bucks each week to their IRA program out of their paycheck. Now, if you got a lot of money in an IRA, you're getting a great tax advantage because it's not taxed till you withdraw it. Mm-hmm. And the only amount that's taxed is what you withdraw. During this pandemic, and it really began during the Great Recession, people who had IRAs, whether they or 401ks, either one, if there was any sponsorship from their employer, you know, they were able to, on an emergency basis, tap into those funds to survive. And many Americans did, millions of them. So today, the average person has about, well, it's under $50,000 in their IRA or 401k, and that is expected to see them through maybe 20, 25 years of estimated retirement expectancy. Ain't going to happen.
No, not at all.
So this Daniel Hemmel, his solution to this is what I love about the work he's done in the article he wrote. He says, so how do we begin to fix America's retirement problem? And he said, it's not that hard to come up with this answer, is we need to strengthen Social Security and strengthen Medicare are the two biggest things we could do that benefit everyone, not just the top 29,000 IRA 401k holders in this country.
Tom, one of the ways we can strengthen Social Security, you might have heard about scrapping the cap, because there's a cap on Social Security. I think it's like 140-some thousand. If you make that amount, you don't pay into Social Security. So people like Elon Musk, people like Bill Gates, you know, people like Jeff Bezos, they can work 1 or 2 hours in the new year and they're done paying into Social Security. And that idea has been floated around for a number of years. You think it's gotten anywhere yet? I don't think so. Do you?
No, it hasn't. And that is, that would be, even that is inadequate to adjust the inequality issues. But what a signal it sends that everybody's going to have an equal share of obligation, of responsibility to help secure the national pension system. There's nothing wrong with that idea. We all receive the same services. We all expect our government to preserve our safety. In so many ways, whether it's through military or through health care or whatever, what's wrong with pensions being protected and preserved and using programs to assure people are going to have a little bit of dignity and able to survive post-work years? And so this is a battle now starting to move in Congress. And it has bipartisan support. Even Democrats and Republicans find reason to support this, even though it only benefits the wealthiest Americans who participate in 401k IRA-type programs.
Amazing. Just amazing.
And it leaves the rest of us in the same hole, struggling to claw our way out.
Tom, I'm so glad you brought this story to America's workforce, because a lot of people don't understand where we are today. It's not retirement security, it's retirement insecurity. And when they started IRAs back during the Reagan administration, I mean, we're looking at 40 plus years ago, and it was touted as, oh yeah, this is just going to be an add-on, it's going to help you. Instead, the defined benefit plans disappeared. Many of them disappeared, and now we have these defined contribution plans, which are the 401ks and the IRAs. And to your point, $50,000 isn't going to get you very far in retirement, not for 20 years. That's going to be tough for even 1 or 2 years. Tom Buffenbarger, our independent labor voice, former general president of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. You take care, stay safe, and we'll talk next month, okay?
Absolutely, Flash. The best to you and all your listeners, and pray for the people in Ukraine.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Josh Nasser on behalf of the United Auto Workers.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our Raising Wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate a five-star rating. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. All right, let's go to Washington right now. And joining us on our live line is Josh Nasser, who is the legislative director for the United Auto Workers, one of the many proud sponsors of America's Workforce. UAW.org is their website. Josh has been a busy guy doing a lot of traveling. You're finally staying put for a little bit, and I guess that's a good thing because there's a lot of things happening in Washington. Josh, how are we doing today?
Doing all right, thanks, and always great talking to you. Yeah, we expect a lot of activity this week and next few weeks as Congress, you know, this is one of the last periods of getting work done before everyone's mind just turns to the midterms and to being on the trail. You know, one of the things that we're really hoping will get done is at long last the Senate, you know, taking up a bill, you know, that will do a lot of the things that were in a Build Back Better, the House passed Build Back Better. You know, we think it's really critical for the Senate to act to incentivize people to buy U.S. cars, to lower drug prices, to close corporate loopholes in the tax code. And, you know, so many other things that were in the Build Back Better, which you've been advocating for years, many of these provisions. So that's one thing. You know, Manchin's the key to that, so we'll have to see how that goes. There's also, you know, House and Senate are negotiating on a final package, a competitiveness package. You know, there's a piece of legislation called Competes Act that passed the House, by the way, with only one Republican supporter. And then you have USICA, which passed the Senate last year. Both bills provide money for chip funding, so we could actually have those semiconductors that are needed for automobiles built in the United States, which, as you know, is not the case right now. But it also, you know, would crack down on, you know, on some unfair labor practices, on like on slave labor products coming from China, for example. It would also extend TAA for people who lose their jobs because of trade in the House passed bill. So there's a lot of important work still left to do this session. And then, of course, there's just the need to have more folks confirmed, you know, from the Biden administration so they can, you know, have a fully functional executive branch. So there's still a lot of holdups that people are not going to confirm. So those are some of the activities for this week and beyond.
Hard to believe that it's been, what, almost a year and a half for Biden in office, and a couple of slots need to be filled in the administration. But that's the politics that we live in today. That's so sad. Josh, if you don't mind, I want to unwind a few things that you said here. I want to get into that CHIP funding. You said that there's hardly any Republican support for that. And I don't understand that part, because we all know, especially in the automobile industry, that there's a CHIP shortage. And we've got to do something about that right away. Now, I know Intel is moving plants and building plants in the United States, one in Ohio. That's going to be online in a couple of years. So what's the problem here with this legislation? Can you give us some details?
Yeah, I mean, so on the Senate side, you know, there was a fair amount of Republican support for the Senate version. But when the vote was actually happened in the House, only Kinzinger voted for it. Republicans were not generally, they were citing the cost of the package and other reasons. To oppose. It wasn't per se on because of the CHIP funding that they were opposing, but this was the chance to vote for CHIP funding, and the record is what the record is, you know. So that's just the position that was taken, and you know, it's really unfortunate, and also, you know, no House Republican voted for Build Back Better. These are major provisions that should, you know, would help millions of working families. So. Yeah, it's really been frustrating, not getting more bipartisan support for these really common sense measures.
I know with Build Back Better, there was some talk, and maybe you can supply some more details, that they were going to take little pieces, parts out of that and try to move forward with it. And the one that you and I have addressed in the past couple of months was this tax credit for EV cars, U.S. made. Electric vehicles, which was pretty significant. Yes. So where are we with that right now?
I think from a realistic point of view, I mean, there might be some attempts to pass individual parts in the House and Senate, but if there's opposition to it, then, there's a problem, because you need 60 votes still to get anything passed in the Senate. So that's why in the beginning of the session, the House and Senate Democrats passed budget resolutions was so they had the ability to use this special reconciliation procedure, which only requires a majority. So doing things through reconciliation is still the most realistic and best chance to get important things done, like the EV tax credit, like lowering prescription drug costs and the like. As far as the EV tax credit, I mean, the need is there more than ever. For making these EVs more affordable for folks, and the tax credit is a major way to do that, and also for incentivizing those cars to be built with union labor in the United States. So the need is there as much as ever, but it's one of many, many things that are going to have to be negotiated for a deal to get done, and we don't know what that is going to include, but I can tell you what we are hoping will be in there, what we're advocating for.
Well, there's a lot on Biden's plate right now. I know he's fully occupied with the situation in Ukraine, and I know a lot of labor unions are watching this. In fact, it came up a couple of weeks ago at the Building Trades Conference, the legislative conference in Washington. There's a lot of concern, and rightly so. Where's the UAW on this? Because, this is all... Everything's connected here. Everything's connected. I mean, a lot of the inflation we're seeing right now is because of that war, gas prices, prices of everything, the supply chain, you can throw that in. So how do we look going forward with all this being said, Josh?
Yeah, well, I think first of all, you know, one of the things that we'd like to point out is that, you know, there's brothers and sisters in the labor movement in Ukraine who are really worried about all the folks there, all those civilians that are under attack, but we think that, you know, the labor movement would be very, very vulnerable, especially to if Russia were to succeed in their efforts. Because one thing that we have seen historically, and this is, you know, true today, and it's been proven a thousand times over, whenever you have any kind of authoritarian state, a non-democracy, if you will, one of the first things that tends to happen is the labor movement. Union workers get attacked. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason for that, because if you think about it, unions are the ultimate in the expression of democracy. It's workers having their own voice. And so for a leader that's trying to control what happens and dictate instead of have a democratic process, unions are kind of a problem. So that's why there's this tendency. So, we do think that, the fight for democracy is important all around the world, here as well as, what's going on in Ukraine.
It's important, too, when you say unions, you talk about independent unions, and you know this all too well, especially in Mexico. And finally, we got some resolve on that with the normalizing of trade deals. That was the what was it? It was the NAFTA 2.0, I think we refer to it. It's the USMCA. And we saw a victory there of sorts, didn't we?
Yeah, so in two plants now, what we have seen is that workers, one was a GM plant in Silao, another plant called a company called Trident X and Auto Parts, where workers for a long time had never had a real voice and you had these company unions where they didn't even get the workers didn't even get to see the contract or even have a real vote to join the union. They were just, they were put in place by management, basically. In both those places, because the U.S. Got involved, the Biden administration, they filed the GM case. They were involved in Trident. You saw a situation where the company unions basically were reined in and workers actually had a real vote free of intimidation. And in both cases, they overwhelmingly picked to join independent unions. Now, those independent unions, that now have to collectively bargain, and we'll see how all that goes. But it's a very optimistic note, and it really proves that, what we know, which is that when workers have a real choice, they do want to have more power and work with their colleagues. The problem there in Mexico and the United States, so often that's not the case. Just take this practice of these captive audience meetings. In almost every organizing drive in the U.S., workers are forced to just listen to, often daily, lectures about all the harm that will happen to them and their community if they join a union, all the reasons not to, just day after day after day. This NLRB is actually considering looking at that as an unfair labor practice, which I think it is an unfair labor practice to force
it
people
is.
To listen to that. So we're seeing a lot of action, that's kind of beneath the radar that's positive for labor rights, but we still need Congress to act. Not just on what I talked about before, but the need for federal legislation like the PRO Act is still as bad as ever.
And they may be baby steps, but we're taking steps in the right direction. And to your point, yes, the NLRB, it's amazing to see the decisions that have been coming out of there. And that's because of the revised makeup of the NLRB. Josh, I'm going to leave it at that note. I know you're busy, very busy week in Washington, and we'll check with you in a couple of weeks and hopefully get some results. How's that sound?
That sounds wonderful. And thanks to you and to all the listeners out there. And, keep up your activism, please.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going down to Gainesville, Florida. We're going to check in with the North Central Florida Labor Council. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans, and we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
American workers are the best in the world, but we face an uphill battle against countries like China that don't play by the rules. There's a bill right now in Congress that would give American workers the trade tools we need to fight back and win. Join me in telling Congress to pass this bill. Visit AmericanManufacturing.org to learn how.
Paid for by the Alliance for American Manufacturing.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. They connect people with employment. You can find more at ulagency.org. Let's go down to Gainesville, Florida right now. Joining us on our live line is Lanny Mathis. Lanny is the business manager for IBEW. That's the Electrical Workers Union Local 1205. Website is IBEW1205.org. And he's a busy guy. He is also president of the North Central Florida Central Labor Council. A lot of centrals in there. He's also president of the Big Bend Building Trades Council. 42 years in the IBEW. Lanny Mathis, how are we doing today, my brother?
Fantastic. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. Florida is an interesting state. A lot of political action going on there. I'm not going to get into it. I'm sure you're a little bit frustrated. But I have to say this. I went to your website, the Electrical Workers website, and I got to get one of these shirts. Make America Union Again. Greatness will follow. I absolutely love that. I got to get one of those shirts. That is just brilliant. And I'm giving you all the credit, okay?
Well, I will take credit for that one. That was my design.
Now, I see them in long sleeve. Do you make them in short sleeve, or can you get one made in short sleeve? I don't like those long sleeve t-shirts.
Short sleeve, multiple colors. You know, we do have them. We run out of stock a lot because we do get a lot of orders since we have built our online store.
I love it. Make America Union Again. Wear it loud and proud. I love that. Love that. Okay, talk to me. Local 1205, about 600 members there. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. And how's the work going down there?
Right now it works better than I've ever seen in my career. We've got full employment. We've got travelers working in our jurisdiction, which means members from other areas, you know, come in and work. Yeah, pretty good right now.
Yeah. Well, you got a pretty big jurisdiction, too. North Central Florida, West Florida, and South Georgia. That's some territory there. What's the outlook here, especially with the infrastructure bill pouring in some more money down there?
Well, so we also, in our jurisdiction, we have Panama City area, which gives us Tyndall Air Force Base. Tyndall was after the Hurricane Michael, was destined to be shut down. One of the halfway decent things President Trump did for us was save Tyndall. Since obviously the election, Joe Biden decided it was going to be the base of the future. So they're about to spend $6 billion in construction at Tyndall Air Force Base.
Oh my gosh. The
infrastructure bill is really get rid. It's going to help us out at Tyndall.
$6 billion. What's that going to mean for IBEW 1205? Any idea on that yet?
Well, not exactly. Normal construction is usually about 25% electrical work. But the interesting part for me is, as building trades president, with the new rules that Biden's made with contracts and with making sure all the jobs go union, you're looking at potentially $6 billion worth of work for the building trades unions.
Yeah, that's good. Well, let's talk about that, because Florida's a right-to-work state. I know there's a lot of non-union contractors down there, and I'm just wondering, with this environment, and you know, a lot of the non-union guys and women, they say, boy, I tell you, I like what they're doing over there on the union side. And in some cases, I know they're organizing. In some cases, they're just going to the union contractors. Can you speak to that, Lanny?
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible, to be honest with you. I get two or three calls a month that people call here and just say, I want to belong to the union. And I'll ask them, you know, how much experience do you have in the electrical industry? How much are you looking to get in the apprenticeship program? They say, no. I don't want to be an electrician. I want to be in the union. As far as people actually, I think the environment's changing. In the South, we're organizing a lot in our jurisdiction. So are all the other locals in the Southeast. We've increased our membership probably 10% on inside construction over the last year or two. The IBEW nationwide has more construction A members than we have ever had in the history of the IBEW. So, yeah, organizing is taking place. The non-union contractors are actually helping us because by paying lower wages and by paying, you know, substandard benefits. All we've got to do is advertise what we actually have, and people are coming and joining and doing the same work for more money with health benefits.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, too, because of the right to work state, and, you know, like, remember that condo collapse that happened last year? And I'm just wondering about building standards and all that. Can you bring us up to speed on that? Because there's been some debate on that over the years. There was something in New Orleans. I think it was a Hard Rock casino that they were going non-union, and it collapsed. Can you speak to that, Lanny? I'm just wondering what the state of Florida, you know, where they are right now and where they're going with that.
Well, I don't know how familiar you are with our politics here. Our governor is nationwide, making itself very famous. And I don't necessarily know that the actual, while it's a terrible law, being a right to work law and everything in the state of Florida, I don't know that it necessarily affects building codes. I think it's a completely separate problem. The fact of the matter is you've got the same people making and enforcing building codes as you do making the decisions to have a right to work state.
Right.
Conditions, it's gotten in construction where build it cheaper, build it faster, build it at all costs, not necessarily better.
Talk to me about the role of the North Central Florida Central Labor Council. You got a pretty good territory there. And again, you're wearing a number of hats here. You're also head of the Big Bend Building Trades Council. But as far as, like, you know, the components of the council, how you approach things down there in Florida. Can you get into that?
Sure. North Central Florida, like any other labor council, consists of multiple different groups of unions. North Central Florida, we represent teachers and pipe fitters and library workers and sanitation workers and bakeries. You know, we have a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
The biggest function we do is political endorsements and that kind of stuff. We are actually in the process now of doing our city, county, and state endorsements. And it really is kind of strange sometimes to take all the different groups and all the different trades together and try to come to a consensus on who to support. We really, here in North Central Florida, you know, it's got most of the Gainesville area up through, I think we got 11 counties now in that Central Labor Council. So there's a lot of county elections, a lot of school boards, a lot of that kind of stuff that we actually do endorsements on. That's the main function of the Central Labor Council.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as the political dynamics going on, you referred to your governor, who's getting all the attention. That whole Disney situation is kind of confusing. How does that muddy up the waters down there with all those, with all that dialogue going on?
The water in Florida stays muddy, man. It's like you got a school of sharks in 2 foot of water. It's so muddy. Everything DeSantis does is just clouding it up. Unite Here represents the Disney workers. We IBEW 606, which is the local just south of here, represents about 1,200 workers that work consistently on or around Disney, the properties around it. There's a whole lot of concern, let's put it that way, that the governor poking Disney in the eye is going to affect a lot of jobs in that area.
Uh-huh. Now, he's up for election this year, isn't he?
He is. Yeah, we've actually got a a Zoom call tonight on endorsements for governor. I will tell you that the last I heard, he had, you know, we request and send a questionnaire to every candidate that's running for an office, any candidate that registers. We seek to interview them for our endorsement process. As of yesterday afternoon, he has not answered our request for the questionnaire to be filled out, which I really don't look for him to.
Yeah. Don't hold your breath on that one.
Exactly.
Yeah. How does this, you know, with all that confusion down there, and Lanny, maybe you can, I'm sure you talk to your members each and every day. And like I said, you're involved in, you got the IBEW, you got the building trades, the North Central, Florida Central Labor, a lot of different unions. Some are more conservative, some are more liberal. How do you put it all together? How do you manage all of that?
You know, it's even within the IBEW itself, we have different units. We represent the city of Ocala, which is in Marion County, Florida, which is extremely conservative area. You know, we have some more conservative units. You know, they're all good guys. We just happen to see politics a little differently amongst ourselves. And like I said, we got 600 members. I would say probably 30% of our members just in Local 205 tend to vote more conservatively than others. You know, in our jurisdiction, we have Gainesville. We have Ocala, which is very conservative. We have Gainesville, which is extremely liberal. We have Tallahassee, which is the home of Florida State University, and it's extremely liberal there. And then further out west is Panama City, again, where it tends to be more military and, in turn, very conservative. It is tricky to do. And what we do when we do political endorsements and we invite different groups of people to be on the endorsement committee, we take input from everybody. We try to make a consensus as to where we can agree. Where we don't agree, we generally don't make an endorsement. Uh-huh. You know, we're a member-driven organization. You know, one of the things I consider myself halfway decent at is running a decent meeting. You know, and if a vote goes one way, that's how that vote goes, and that's what we're going to do as a group.
Right.
If you do it that way, you know, sometimes we don't make an endorsement for a particular race. But we try to do a consensus with the majority of our members.
Very democratic, it sounds like. Well, you've been around the block a while. I see 42 years in the IBEW. How long are you going to be doing this, Lanny? I mean, there's got to be an end point here sometime.
In the IBEW, we can retire at 62 years old.
Uh-huh.
I turned 61 in May. You know, we have elections, and, you know, that stems a lot of stuff to my my desire was always to retire at 62 years old. With the job I got now, I really do enjoy it. You know, I've always tried to make a difference in the community. I'm probably going to work till I'm 65, you know, and, you know, that depends on health and my wife's health and my family, you know. I'm going to try to leave a little time. I've been very lucky. You know, the IBEW has been very good to me. I've seen a lot of cool stuff. I've been on Alcatraz. I've seen the Liberty Bell. You know, I've been to Key West. I've been very lucky with my travels. Most of those travels have been right by myself. I'd like to retire in enough time that I can take my wife with me and she can see some of the stuff I've been able to see. So probably another 4 or 5 years, and then I'm going to be done with it.
Lanny, sounds like a really good goal. Thank you so much for joining us today, Lanny Mathis, who is president of the North Central Florida Central Labor Council, also business manager at IBEW Local 1205. You take care, my friend. Keep in touch and stay strong down there. You got to have a thick skin in Florida, okay?
You ain't kidding. I appreciate y'all here.
All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the Heat and Frost Insulators and the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. Until then, all of you, have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.